Welcome to Farewell, Mr. Nice Guy. And this is your host, MNG. And we have a great topic today. And I have two guests here with me today, ready to discuss and possibly get on each other's nerves. Maybe, but we'll see. So we have Jeff here again. You know, Jeff was on the last episode with me, talking that shit, getting on people's nerves. He has a very unique opinion. Glad to have you all here. Go ahead and tell the people what's up.
What's going on?
Then we have Anye, aka the Chocolate Queen. We are blessed to be in her in the royalty service. You know, we humbly bow down to you. Go ahead and speak to the people.
Well, thank you. That was a great introduction for me. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Wow. Your Majesty.
Thank you. Okay.
Now, what we have here is I'm going to play a recording. I basically went to this Black Inclusivity for Black Fathers conference, and they had a panel up there. So part of this series is basically discussing what Black fathers mean in a household versus the stereotypes that are out there. No, Black fathers aren't in their kids' lives. Black fathers are lazy. You know, mm-hmm. Black mothers is, you know, XYZ. You know, they're keeping the fathers away and, you know, everything. You know, and this podcast is mainly to promote and help Black fathers get back into their kids' lives by trying to give them free game. We're not trying to charge people for this free information. We're trying to give it away. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to make sure that every father has their opportunity and their due justice in court. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and play this take really quick. Y'all go ahead and tell me what y'all think.
How has my father been inclusive and intentional on the impact in my life as well? Because, you know, we talk a lot about father impact on sons, but also fathers have a great impact on their daughters also. My dad used to take me to school every single morning and drop me off, and he would be very loud about it. Roll down the windows, play music, say hello to all the teachers, hi. And I would ask my dad, why do you do that? Why are you embarrassing me like that? He said, I want everybody at that school to know that you have a father that is very active and involved in your life. And this is not a one-parent household, this is a two-parent household. And that stuck with me because he was very intentional about letting all of my white teachers know that, hey, you've got more than just your mom to deal with, you have your father as well. And I think that has impacted my life.
Okay. So she goes in and she basically said, and this is the host that was talking, her father intentionally let these people know that she had a two-family household. Why would he go to such an extent to let people know that he was involved in his child's life? What is the exact importance of that? But before we get to these questions, I just want to know, what is your opinion from hearing that story? Or what did you gather from what she said? Let's start with Anye.
So, in particular, letting and being intentional about letting the teacher know, and even anybody that he is in her life, it built character, self-esteem, confidence. And by doing that, it also have the child, which with her, to recognize that moms are just not in the forefront. Fathers can be too, and they share 50% of responsibility in regards to your children and building the character in them. Also, having the teacher acknowledge that, you know, if there is a situation or even kids, that the father is around. So,
Okay. Jeff, what are your thoughts? You know, just listening to the recording.
He did the right thing. He wanted everybody to know, hey, it's a Black father in this child's life. It's not just a mother. That's great, because my thing is, a lot of parents don't do that anymore. A lot of fathers, rather. For one, they can't do it. And two, the mothers might not allow them to do it. So by him doing that, that set a whole different dynamic in the white teacher's eyes. Now they could call the father. They don't have to just depend on the mother to come up there all the time now.
So what does, and just listening to him, to her say that he had to do it in front of the white teachers. Now put that into perspective and think about what time that had to happen in. You know, we're probably thinking the maybe the 70s, the 60s, you know, where you may have had, well, you had that father in the house, so you had that dynamic, you know, but and dare I say, before, you know, Friend of the Court came around and the New Deal for the welfare came around, but you had those parents in a household working together and striving together and struggling together. But he wanted to be the difference maker and say, you know, I'm going to drop you off every day. So these white people, these teachers will understand that you're not just some ordinary black girl with a one parent household.
And I absolutely agree with that, only because, like you said, if you think about wherever you're, because I'm not sure the age of the woman on that video, but if you saw it, then you know, a lot of the sitcoms, always the father, or even movies, the beginning, the father always passed away, and it's a strong, single black mother in the household holding it down, or the father have done something to get arrested, whatever the case may be. And believe it or not, well, we believe it, teachers do base reality on things that's not reality. And, you know, even the imagery still goes on today. But back then, you know, you see a magazine that want to promote healthy families, but you see a black woman with a child and no father. So, yeah, teacher get in the game to teach. And, of course, they always say, I don't see color, I don't see this. But they do have their bias by what's been imagery shown on television, commercials, sitcoms. I think we always say, I know Bill Cosby did what he did, but when we have to reference in the 90s and the 80s or a sitcom, even if it was two-parent household, it was like the father was only known for disciplinary. He wasn't loving. He was a struggle father with his emotions and things of that nature. And I feel like for her to be a young girl and woman, and he made sure to let the white teachers know that I exist. If you catch her acting like a lady, if you catch her being kind, if you catch her doing something right, I had a helping hand in it. So,
okay. So that presence of having a father and having that structure is, we would say, that is needed in the black household.
I agree 100%.
Okay. So since y'all agree, can you tell me the importance of having a black father in the household? And Jeff, you are in your kid's life, okay? You have stepped up in other ways as well. So what is the importance to you? And you had your father in your life. So what is the importance to you in that structure from when you was a kid with your father to in turn being a parent in the household yourself?
Well, having my father in my life, he showed me more things that that my mother could, period. But stand on 10 toes. Whatever you say, that's what you mean. If you say, hey, I'm going to do this, well, you got to stand up to that. Being a kid saying, oh, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that, and me not going through with it, he came to me, hey, you got to do this. Because by us being black men, only thing we have right now is our word. So if we got our word and I tell you I'm going to do this, I have to stand on all 10 toes down and do it. Now, becoming a man, realizing what he was teaching me, now I can show my kids, okay, this is what you do. You know what I'm saying? I think it's more important now for fathers to be in young men life, because the streets right now is so crazy. You don't have that man telling you, hey, I love you. Black fathers got a problem with saying that, I love you, to their kids.
True.
So I tell my son every day before he go to school, I give him hugs. It's a great feeling to know you're raising a man, but he don't have to be hard. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
He don't have to go out there thinking, oh, I got to fight everybody to let them know I'm a man.
Right.
So me, what my father put in me, I'm putting in him. And plus, I have an older son, a 19-year-old son. It's a bonus son. He's my wife's child, but I've been raising him since he was five. So he's my son. He's learning from me and his father. Me and his father have similar views, but sometimes we don't. But he come to both of us and we talk. We sit him down and talk to him. Look, this is what you do, or this is what you don't do.
Okay.
Now, by him being 19, he's out there with a little more scarier crowd because he's driving now.
Right.
You got the police. You got the bumping rob. You got everything. So he's out there trying to live his life. But at the same time, you got to be a man and stand all 10 toes down. If you say you're going to do this, that's what you got to do. If I leave the house, you got to protect this household because now you're the little man.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So, yeah, I think having a black father in a household today, past tense, 60s, 70s, 80s, is important because a woman can do so much, but she cannot and would never be able to raise a man to be a man. A boy to be a man.
Okay. And I see you over there. You agreeing. You shake your head.
Well, I will say this. I'm coming from a perspective who was raised. So I'll just give you a little backstory. My father has a mental illness that he never knew he had until my mid-20s. So I grew up knowing him. He exists. I saw him, you know, when I visit family, but in the household, he was not. I will say this, growing up, only seeing a woman be strong. And my mom had a bad habit to say to me, I was trying to be a mother and a father. And I always tell her, it was impossible for you to be a father because you're not a man. You could not think like a man. You were a disciplinary, an extreme disciplinary woman who created structure. So only having seen that in my life, growing up, I became a disciplinary and a structured woman. And some of it was good because it got me to advancements and things in college and et cetera and those things. But how I was operating in relationship with partners, it was not. And it only took a lot of self-reflection, maybe in my mid-20s, when I realized that and I remember people telling me, you are like a teacher, something to that nature. And I didn't understand until I started dating someone who told me exactly what it is. And I had to do a self-reflection. Now, granted, I never, ever, ever was a woman that say, I don't need a man for this, man ain't this, this. I never thought that way. And God made me the way I am because of my parents, I think. But I can remember and recall times like the young lady said in the video about her father being intentional, right? When you fall off your bike, and the only person when you see your mother wear down because she's, you know, a single person working hard to provide and does not want to tell you she can't, you get up yourself. And so I never had a fallback. I never had someone to teach me the game. I never had someone just to change the tire. And those things I had to figure out myself. You know, it was times where I'm like, I had to learn how to change the tire myself because I refused to either give a vagina or pay $20, you know? So I found myself at 20 doing that. And I felt like I didn't have a problem doing it. But who wants to do that when it's cold?
Right.
I learned how to change a battery. I learned how to change a headlight. I know how to put a muffler up with a wire hanger. So those things I had to teach myself that I wish I didn't have to do. So it created character in a sense, but it also, it as I grew, trusting a man became very difficult because here I am, a woman who could do all that, and work and provide for myself, but then I also want that security and the emotional connection, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, a father is very, very, very important. I mean, I did have a stepfather for a little while, and I recall there are things men tells you, and any child, that your mother can tell you 20 times, and when a man tells you, it's something different, it sticks different, it hits different.
Right.
And I'm saying something but puberty. Mm. You know, I was so burned up with the question that I learned something at school, my mother wasn't around, and I asked my stepfather, and he told me, and you know, it stuck. Still to this day, I know our exact conversation. But that lesson taught me as I was growing that a father should not only be known for discipline. A father should be known for love. A father should be known to help you with your homework,
mm-hmm.
picking you up. And like Jeff said, you know, telling your child, I love you. I think our generation, because we can say we all in the same generation, is that we're actually learning what it is to self-reflect and self-heal and be outspoken about it. I don't think my father and them generation understood that, because the 80s and, you know, the 70s was a little different. Late in my life, I was able to forgive him, and we have a relationship now. And thanks to my mom for that, because she did everything she taught me how to forgive. But you know, I always used to say, at least I know who I look like, where I come from. Mm-hmm. And if I had to call him, I would. But yeah, so that's my perspective, not having a father constantly around. And just when you're having a hard day, you know, when you are a teenage girl, your mother never understands you.
Okay.
We didn't understand each other, but as an adult woman, I thank her, because teenagers are something else.
Oh, they are.
And I tell her, I'm like, some parents give up on their kids. I mean, you snap your fingers and... Anyways, I say this to say, I wouldn't have to emotionally get in touch with certain things and understand certain things later in life, right, if I had that strong male presence there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And even teachers, you know, they can sniff a kid that's a single household. Especially the parents, like, oh, I can't pick the kids up. And yeah, I didn't want to see my mom wear out. I didn't want to see her struggling to, and she didn't tell us, but I knew. And I think subconsciously, we don't realize that your children take a lot of your personality. So I'll find myself emulating my mom at 14. You better clean up this. You know? So clearly, in my 30s, I'm like, you better clean up this house. So I kind of like, you know, just.
We are our parents at the end of the day.
Yeah.
We put our genome, DNA, and everything
right
from both our parents. And I share the same sentiment as both of y'all, because I came from a single parent household. You know, primarily, I was raised by my grandmother. Now, my mom, a young teenage mother, was out working trying to pave the way for a young black kid that did not know where he was going. She didn't know where she was going. She didn't even know pretty much what she wanted to do with her life, but she knew all she knew is that she had to provide. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, how many situations have you heard of where the mother is just in a situation where she has to provide,
right,
and rely on her support team to do all the rearing? So there's my grandma and there's my auntie. Now, my grandma, she was a soldier. Like, she was the strict one. She was on my ass, mm-hmm. Okay? I can be 10 houses down and I can hear her call me when the street lights come mm-hmm. on, and I'm flying down the street,
yep,
trying not to fall over my unlaced gym shoes,
mm-hmm.
trying to get to that door. And she was like, you heard me calling you? I surely did. Mm-hmm. You know, you gotta get here before the street lights come on.
Mm-hmm.
There were instances where it probably would have been important for my dad mm-hmm. to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, regardless of why he wasn't there, I always state that he didn't use the resources that he had at his fingertips in order to be in my life.
I agree.
You can't just go knock on the door when you got a court order in place. You can't go and just kick down, show up at people's schools because you got a court order in place. You need to go and exercise the court order. Not to my father's defense, he's always said that, well, I always tried to be there, but y'all kept moving and everything.
It ain't no but.
But you didn't exercise none of the resources that you had. You didn't go and think to go call that attorney on the corner for a conversation and say, look, I want to see my son, but she's keeping him from me. That's against the court. If you're on child support, that is against the court order. You have the right to exercise your right to be in that kid's life.
Right. But at the same time, I'm not giving nobody no passes. Or,
okay, no passes.
Back then, I don't think a lot of black men had the mental capacity to say, I gotta go get a lawyer and sit down with this lawyer and tell this lawyer what's going on with my son, my baby mama, and how I can go see him. I'm not saying that was that case, but
not at all. But I'm not disagreeing with you. They probably didn't have the capacity, but you were able to walk into that courtroom and get told how much you had to pay, how many days that you had to go see your child, and not enforce what was put there. Now, you know, if you get called by the cops, they're going to enforce the law for you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But you don't know that you go to the courthouse and enforce that order.
Well, this is my question, because I'm not a man. And I 100% agree. Cause I always,
you got a question, Chocolate Queen. Okay.
Yep. I always say this because you would hate to have to explain it to your child how far you went to be in their life. Because you don't want that resentment. I want to ask this question, though, because I heard Jeff say mental capacity. Are we not the same group that keeps reinventing themselves, right? Like, some people believe in reincarnation and whatever the case may be. I don't know about the mental capacity in certain instances. I think if you really want to, you will exhaust all your options until that person go to Mexico or over the country or somewhere.
Even with that, and to take what you're saying and to take what Jeff's saying, but what about the people that you're around?
That's only if... I'm coming from...
I'm asking my dad a question.
I'm coming from the street advantage, okay?
Okay.
I've hung with them. I've been out there. That comes up and you're drinking, you get mad. You get to fighting the people that you are around. So now the people that had sense and was telling you, you got drunk and you fought with them. So now that you're not talking to them no more. So now you down to the dummies of your friends.
Okay.
So them dummies is in the same boat you're in. Man, I can't go see my son either. She got this paper. I agree 100%. There's no paper. There's no police officer that's going to stop me from seeing my son. That's only because we, as of today, have wisdom. We, as of today, have the internet to pick up and say, what can I do to get my son?
Yeah.
Back then, in the 80s, there was no internet. If you didn't have the direct connect with someone that was smarter than you, and 9 times out of 10, I don't think a lot of people hung around people that were smarter than them because they didn't like them because they were smarter than them.
And okay. I will... kind of move the conversation to women, you know, bitterness and men, bitterness too,
right?
It is 100% real. I have friends, and I hold all my friends accountable, and if you don't like it, then we're not truly friends.
That's what I'm saying.
But I am aware that And that's why I say my mom taught me forgiveness, because one thing she did not do in the household is says, that's why you look like your damn father. He don't do that. Like, she did actually, where I gained respect for my mother is at, I was turning 15. I used to sign her signature on slips to go on field trips.
Kind artist.
I was. Because it was like, I gotta wait till she get home. That's another thing. Not having a father. You gotta wait on a single parent to get there or get here or whatever the case may be. We had latchkey programs. We always had accounts. We had a mentor, someone else in the picture helping. Like you said, with your grandmom and things of that nature, right?
Yeah.
She had signed all my birthday cards. And I remember the last year she signed it, I was already practicing her signature, so I knew her handwriting. And I confronted her like, you know, it was like a whole sting operation. How dare you? How could you? And at the time I didn't understand, but she was not trying to hurt her child. So I thank her for, because I'm able to forgive him because she did things like that. She didn't make me hate him. There are women out there who purposely operate in strictly narcissism. They have not done the work on themselves. They cannot admit that they're not fit. They're not. Women are not always a fit, better fit parent.
No, they're
bottom
not.
Bottom line.
No, they're not.
And it's very sad to see that you are willing to have your child struggle in shelters while you consistently try to figure. And let me tell you, womanhood is tough. Okay, manhood is too, but womanhood. Involvement, it's a lot of things that go on too, right? But to admit that a man emotionally is, well, they say stable creatures, and with women, unstable creatures, it's like, that's what you choose for your child. That's not love. That's not unconditional love, because you operating solely in your own feelings, not considering the child that both to the tangle, but at the, you know, so I've witnessed that even now in people I'm not friends with.
But I don't think neither mother or father consider the child when they're both in a toxic relationship. I think it's more of a I want, you know what I'm saying? And 9 times out of 10, the father, I don't know why, but wants out. And she said, if you leave, you're not gonna see your son. And he still leaves. So he goes out the house thinking, well, I ain't got no son no more now. So instead of saying, well, let me leave, go get on the internet, find his lawyer. You know, I mean,
So let me touch on a little bit on that. And in the first 2 years of my son's life, birth, and all that great stuff, I was every name that you could think of. I was the weekend father. I was an ain't shit father. I was paying the rent, but I was the you still ain't doing shit for your son father. I was all those names. I don't think there was one name that wasn't conjured up that I have not been called. It'd be new for me to hear something that I was called before. But once my son started living with me and the tables turned, I became the best person in the world. I am so grateful for you. You do such a great job. Thank you. You know, you're such an amazing father. The tables turned. What was bitter at first is now sweet. And it was almost like night and day. And then you're sitting there thinking to yourself, wow, like when you had primary custodial primary address and everything, it was okay to cuss me out and everything. But once I took custody, never cuss you out for not showing up.
Yep.
Never put you down. Never said that you wasn't enough. Never said you wasn't shit. Never willingly tried to put you on child support to take your money. But the only way that my son was able to come with me is if I pay her $100 a month.
Let me ask you a question. Did she grow up with her father?
Well, no, she didn't. She grew up with her grandfather. Her grandfather. But I don't think that, I believe that it was the incapabilities that she had and her lack of circumstances which geared her towards using an individual for monetary gain. That's what I would say. And if a black father was in that household, and a strong black father, not just there, but a strong black father that was in that household, would this particular individual still carry themselves in the same vein?
Probably not.
Because
I don't know. I think she might be the same.
Well, no. Listen.
Not to get into assumptions. I want to talk about assumptions. Okay. We primarily want to kind of gauge the idea towards if the black father was there. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But my next question to y'all is, and we're gonna kind of jump around at this point. Having a black father.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What do you believe, and I think, and Aya, you pretty much touched on this, what do you believe the impact of having that person in your life, whether it's a father figure, whatever, how did it impact you in dating and raising children?
That's nice. I like that.
Jeff looking perplexed. He like,
I like that, bro.
I wasn't ready for that question. I can't stand your ass energy.
No, I'm ready for that because I'm ready for that.
To go back a little bit, because you said would that happen in the same vein, Jeff is kind of right, because if it's in you, it's in you.
Okay.
I mean, in a sense, fair. Depending on the age you are too, right?
Fair.
But if you want to go first regarding the impact.
The impact that my father had on me in relationships and raising my kid. My father, all I seen from day one, and I'm gonna be 100 with you. You know, my brothers and them know my father's my stepfather. He's really my stepfather. Okay, so but he's taking care of me from birth. You know what I'm saying? So the impact he had, I only seen him love my mother.
Okay,
we I probably seen them argue once, maybe twice. And it wasn't no argue. It was, no, Sandy. Well, okay, Sandy. You know what I'm saying? And that was it. So he taught me to always respect him, but at the same time, be firm with him.
Okay.
Don't be a pushover, but make sure you know she know you love her.
Okay.
Make sure she's always good.
Okay.
But at the same time, she got to make sure you always good.
Okay.
And raising the kids, he taught me, no matter what your kids are doing, if they quiet, if they noisy, if they just lounging around, make sure you know where they're at, what they doing, and who they're hanging around with. Because if you don't know who your kids hanging around with, your kids will start picking up stuff that you would never know that they had in them. And you know it's not you. So now you're looking like, shit, where the fuck that come from?
Right.
So he told me to make sure everybody is well taken care of in your household. Your household is the first, last, and the middle stop. Everything else after that, it don't matter. Because if your household good, you good.
Okay. I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
Aya got this look on her face, and
I agree.
She just like,
you know what? It's so crazy because I come from a different perspective, but I think I'm cut from a different cloth because I've always thought that way. I think the only thing I can say is that the strength I have for someone who, and you had to be a certain kind of man to deal with my personality. Just let's be honest. Now, I'm not no bitter person. I ain't yelling. I ain't carrying on. I'm not one of those busting your windows. None of my ex can ever tell anybody that I was stalking them. None of that. And I didn't play that either.
That they know of, right?
No. And I ain't playing that either because, listen, I work too hard for my stuff to get messed up. So we ain't play all that. And I was very, very mature. A lot of people say you very mature. I actually gave little hand notes and tell them why I wasn't working out. But
You left a little, yeah, left a little sticky notes around the house.
Correct. This is where we at.
She didn't write the Dear John letter. She left a sticky note.
Goodbye.
Follow the sticky notes.
Dear John, sticky
and
notes.
And it actually helped people. You know, they're like, dang, you was really right. But it took them 10 years. Men evolve a little different. And
imagine talking about that shit at therapy. Yeah, man. She left me with sticky notes. You know, I think that's what, you know what? I think that shit top mine. Like, I'm leaving you on a sticky
you know,
note.
Like, pros and cons. Right. Like, this is not where we at. Pros and cons. What I see in 10 years. So,
she said 10 years.
10 years. I don't see you in 10 years.
I don't see that. For you. I have to have that serious talk. And then when they hear that, it's like, you know. But I will say this. So with that being said, in my relationship, how I operate, I had to learn it's a good being feminine, but you can't be both at the same time. Now I'm a structured kind of person when it comes to like certain things, the task driven, because I don't like things to be all like disorganized. But I to have a man to take care of me, oh my God, that was a struggle. I'd be on the side of the road when I had my heels on. No, damn well, I don't feel like changing my tire or anything. And I'd be crying like, I don't want a car. It was that bad. It got that bad for me. Yeah, I have to be honest. So, your cousin, your brother, one time, I was like, man, I'm about to leave. And when he told me, you're not leaving because it's 2:00 in the morning and my woman ain't going to be out there. No one has ever talked to me or told me that. If I said I was leaving, that's just what happened. But when he did that, I was like, well, you trying to be my daddy? But I realized he's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't be out in the street going home. You know, it's just certain things I had to learn about myself and allow him to lead a situation. And I had to, so I'm always like thinking analytically, like the person, and I'm giving my woman perspective on everything, but I cannot do that. So I had to learn, like, he has different children by different women who has different personalities. And quite to their amazement and shock, I do not bother them at all. I be in my own little world and do not bother them. However, I had to learn, because I'm like, this is just foolishness. This is just craziness. But a man mind operates differently. So that's another thing. I didn't have, if I was in a two-person household with a father, I would know, right? I would come into a relationship knowing, not completely operation, but an understanding.
Yeah.
I had to learn the understanding.
So would you say that you would know how to be treated by a black man?
Being in a submissive role.
That's
what it be. What it boils down to is like, when I think he says to me, I need you to leave when it's time to talk to the manager. Manager, please. Like, and in other situations.
Well, sometimes the woman can handle the manager way better than a man can, because that, especially if it's a male manager. He'll fall. He'll succumb faster to a woman than he will a man, because he's trying to be defensive
with a man
to that aggression, you know, that the man is bringing when he's not even being aggressive.
Yeah, and but to
a woman, if she come in there yelling and all this stuff, like, he's not gonna meet that with aggression.
Mm-mm.
Because he already know how it's gonna look.
Mm-hmm.
He's not gonna meet that with aggression. He's gonna be like, How can I fix this?
Mm-hmm.
And if he do meet it with aggression, and I hate to say this, he probably got feminine energy.
Yeah.
Facts.
And I'm passive aggressive. So when I say speak to your manager, it's not, let me speak to you. It's like, can I please speak to your manager? And sometimes I don't even tell him what it's about. There's no need to explain. That's what I need.
There's no need to explain that to a peon when I want to talk to him. a little higher.
So, in all honesty, my sister been married 8 years, 9 years, and my nephew Jeff knows this. You guys know this. He's around me all the time, and I helped raise him. And the first few years of his life without a man, it was extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
because he's a little boy, and you know, he does what little boy thinks what they do, and I learned that. I mean, breaking up stuff, and I'm like, ah, but men are so different. They yeah, you put the hole in, we'll fix it kind of thing. And we get so bent out of shape about certain things. But I remember him coming into my sister and our life because I was helping her, and we were, it was such a relief because her and I had to go off our schedules to see who was going to babysit him, who was going to be available, how we were going to get Pampers, milk, and things of that nature. And it was, we cried, I mean, sometime at night because we were young. We were 19, she was 17, and we were getting older, you know. Mm-hmm. But when he came, and he came when pottying was extremely hard. And we like, why he just can't get it? Cause you know, boys don't get potty like
they,
this.
They like to aim and shoot. You gotta use the Cheerios
for real.
You know, Cheerios. They like to go into the corner. Girls like to tell you like it's time to go to bed. The boys like to go in the corner and stare at you. It's like, what you over there doing? So, but it was a breath of fresh air because it took us out of the equation with the sternness. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, my sister's feelings got hurt a little bit. Oh, my son, my baby. And I would have to talk to her like, listen, he means well, because discipline is nothing but love in my eyes. Now, right. It's the difference between abuse. Mm-hmm.
I remember them days of abuse.
Willing. But like Jeff and you know, you building structure. Mm-hmm. And what it is, what manhood looks like. Not the movies. I am a real father in real time. And this is what it looks like.
Right.
And like you said, operate on your word. You know, definitely. Being trustworthy, being a provider. Because guess what? You don't want your son or any child to go out there and be a bum. That's not what you taught them. Hell so, no. And like you said, you know, kids get amongst friends, and if you don't have that strong presence, they can succumb to certain things. Unfortunately, people don't have a greater mind. You know, for me, I mean, I tell all parents, whether it's a father or mother, all parents should talk to their children about the real world too when they have a good age. Because at my mom, I mean, I went to school where it was very diverse, and we had a lot of white friends who was doing things that I knew was not good. But because my mother did talk to me, however, having to call her, and it probably hurt her to discipline us more than we thought. But that was exhausting. Can you imagine working two jobs, possibly three? She would carry us to work with her and then have to whoop your kids and go to the parent teacher conference.
I did that. I worked two jobs.
Yeah.
Went to school. Sound like a great parent to me.
And still had to come and beat my kid down to the ground when he act up in school.
But I say this, why two parent households is important.
It is. Cause you got that nurturing side.
Yeah.
And then you have that disciplinary side. Mm-hmm. So you have that structure, mm-hmm. and then you kind of have that, okay, I got somebody to fall along because, you know, I need that comfort, because I know dad ain't about to comfort me. Mm-mm. Like, damn, that he about to look at me with this stern ass look, and I need to go back in my room and chill the fuck out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mom gonna come in there like, are you okay? Mm-hmm. Everything's all right? And you get that balance. Okay, you get that balance. So I'll talk about, you know, my raising of my son and, you know, how I deal with relationships. Now, I'm going to tell you the one thing that my dad told me about when it came to relationships is to keep an ever revolving door of women. That's what my dad did. Nah. As a kid.
100% you're right, bro. 100%.
And I realized this when I was an adult.
Oh, so you believe that's working for you?
No.
Okay, I just...
It worked for me for a nice amount of time.
I mean, it was good.
It was damn
like
so.
It's like chasing a new car. You know, the old model you did? Get a new model. So
terrible.
But that's when we were boys, though. We were boys.
All right, say
that. So one of the things I learned from my dad, and this is from the little bit of time my dad did spending with him growing up, is one, I fell in love with jazz. Mm-hmm. He would always play jazz when I would sleep on the couch. Even though he had a two-bedroom house, I still slept on the couch. So play jazz all night long. This is when they had smooth jazz on a radio station. They ain't got that shit no more.
Hell
they got
no.
They got the fluff shit out here. That bullshit. They don't play jazz like they used to.
Hell no.
So you listen to jazz 92.3.
Mm-hmm.
Used to play jazz all night long. I used to love it. Go to sleep to it every night. The other thing was that he introduced me to guns.
Mm-hmm.
Fell in love with guns from my dad. It was his fault. You shouldn't put books on the coffee table if they're not been meant to read. Coffee tables are meant for books and coffee. But if you put books on the coffee table, people are going to read them. Mm-hmm. That's why the books are in the waiting room on a coffee table.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
right there for you to read, right?
Yep.
So I also seen that my dad had a rotation of women. I've never seen the same woman twice at his house.
Mm-hmm.
It was always a variety of women. And I didn't realize I picked that up until like a long time ago.
Today? Oh.
Lord. I ain't coming for me tonight.
Facts.
I didn't realize I picked that up until like maybe into my 30s. I realized I picked up that trait.
Mm-hmm.
Another trait that I picked up was y'all can forgive me for saying this. I wasn't being a bad parent. But, my son was asleep. Oh, I went and creeped to somebody else's sheets. And I would come back home.
Hey, that's being a good parent. The person don't know where you live at. The kid's safe.
And look. And my dad was like, oh, I used to do that. I used to leave you at home sleeping. I go to the club.
You picked that up.
Bro. I could have woke up at any point in time.
Now, see, we don't know... But I'm not going to say demons. We pick up our parents' bad habits.
Bad habits.
And not know it until we already grown and look back and be like, wait a minute. This is what he was doing to me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, now it's hard to be a good father. Now,
definitely. Definitely.
I'm going to say 80s, 70s. It wasn't that hard. Reason being, we got this thing called the internet.
Okay.
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 Our kids are smart.
Okay.
So we tell them, hell no, you can't go there. Go sit down before I whoop you. They're going to go pull up child abuse. And you know what number pop up, right? The people number. So how can I be a very stern father, but at the same time, let my kids know, you can't call the people on me, baby, because if the people come, it's going to be the 9 times out of 10, the white man with a badge and a gun, and that's going to put me in a position of me not coming back.
And in some instances, it's not even them calling. It's as simple as just going to school and tell your teacher, because now they're authorized to report it.
Yeah.
You're right. You're right.
They're authorized to report it.
You're right.
I want to know about that. Remember I said how it's important to talk to your children, and I know you said the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta outsmart. Sometimes you gotta outsmart your children, knowing that if you can,
I'm gonna tell you now, you can't.
You can't.
You can't.
Here's the thing. And I get what you're saying about social media. And
I'll tell you example why. I'll go ahead, but I'll tell you example what I did to my nephew.
And I have a great topic for that, which is social media the new parent? And that's a whole nother episode. That's a whole nother episode.
It ain't gotta be a whole episode. It's a one word answer. Yes. That's it.
If you let it.
It's not a one word response. It's not a one word response, because there are tips and tricks. Okay, for example, my son is not supposed to be a gamer kid. Mm-hmm. Okay. He was not supposed to get a game system.
And he got 3.
At the age that he was at. So he hadn't getting a game system at like about 5,
oh, wow,
6 years old. Mm-hmm. And I disagreed with him having a game system, because I had a game system when I was younger, and it made me a gamer kid. And all I wanted to do was play video games. Didn't want to go do anything else. Didn't want to go read a book. Didn't want to go to school and educate myself.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't wait to get home to do 2 things, play video games and watch cartoons.
Yeah.
Now, before you go any further, I'm gonna ask you this. Is it safer your kid being a gamer kid, or you being a gamer kid at your time?
Whew.
the way it's, well, I don't know about gaming, but that, it looks like some stuff is violent. And
at my time, it was okay to be a gamer kid because we still went outside. We still went out and played with other kids. Now, being a gamer kid, there are a lot more mature 17 games out that kids that are 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old that's playing. For example, Call of Duty.
I agree.
We know that's a mature game. Just like when Grand Theft Auto first came out. That was a mature game, but I had that game at 10, 11 years old when it first came out. And it came out on the PlayStation 1. And I had that game. And all you did was run people over, kill them. But it didn't make me go drive and run people over, though.
No. You were smart.
Well, because you got out and gained some kind of skills. Like, you know, kids that stays inside, they really think that's reality. But I will say this. Like, I'll give an example. Like, I'll smart kids. So, my nephew, he's a big kid. He looks a little older than he is, and I remember him saying, well, he see us, we make drinking look real fun. Unfortunately, we shouldn't be doing it in front of kids. We happy
we when make we drinking look real fun,
right? Exactly. So they like, oh, okay, you know. And I'm sure we did that when we was kids in the Christmas parties and grabbed the little booze. Well, kids is getting, he's getting, teenagers or preteens or adolescents getting to that age where they just trying to smell it, right? But he kept insisting. I said, well, you know what, you are not developed. Your brain is not functioning. You have not developed, you know, to intake and know your limits. And once it starts, it gets out of control. If you, you know, and you don't, we don't know if it's preconceived genetics and all that. So anyways, I said, you want to drink? Okay. So I found DUIs, videos of drunk children killing pregnant women, and I made him watch videos what drinking can do to you if it's not or constructively, right?
Right.
Do you know he felt ill afterward and did not ask again? So it's sometimes in having a conversation, you know what, you know what I would say. Remember I told you guys I had a lot of mentor. I was a camp kid. I was actually a camp counselor. We had latchkey programs and programs that catered to staying out the streets, catered to saying no to drugs. So when we say the internet are raising our kids, that is a choice sometimes, because you as a parent can mandate your child spend time with you and the family, put the phones away. There's camping. There's still camp. I know things are extremely expensive now, but there's a lot of grants and free programs that people have no idea exist, but you have to look up the resources.
True.
So I totally agree with everything she said, but
okay.
One, I'm not sending my kids to no camp. Reason being, it's too many molesters out here now. You never know who's in that camp that's gonna touch your kid. You don't
Boy
even
Scouts
know
of America.
Huh? Facts. and then you don't know who kid that's been molested is going to touch your kid or another kid, and now they bring it to your kid.
Well, what about day camps and programs?
That's camps, period. My thing is, if I can't see my son or my daughter, then to me, they're too far out of sight. Maybe that's just me. But my thing is, by being a black father, I want to protect my kids from everybody that's saying, oh, it's okay for you to choose if you're a boy or girl. What do you feel like today? If you feel like a man, you could be a man today. I'm trying to control as much as possible while they're still young. Let them have a childhood.
But let me ask you this. You're trying to control that, but you give them a phone and access to that stuff.
No, I'm saying I'm trying to control as much as I can.
I know, but when you're, I don't know how, I don't know what y'all got in your household, if it's censored.
No, it's not. They phones are wide open. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, so it's like
they can see it, but can't nobody touch them. It's my thing.
Well, here's the thing. In that essence, okay, I think that not having your kids be able to experience those other people, and not to say that, and I'm not saying other people as in like you know, the LGBTQ community. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying being able to experience, having able to experience a variety of people and have unique experiences to that. Now, are there, could possibly be some molesters there. Definitely, that's a risk right there. But it's not different from the same risk as them going to school and being molested there by a teacher.
Groomed.
By a principal, by a counselor. There's no controlled environment that once the kid is out of your sight and you pretty much give authority to another entity mm-hmm. or another group mm-hmm. or organization or whatever the case is, there's always going to be the risk of some type of foul play that can possibly happen. And it's not necessarily it has to be molestation.
Yeah.
It could be drugs.
Right.
It could be sex.
And let me say this.
It could be anything.
Let me say this. That's what goes back to talking to your children. Now, I didn't have a father in the home, but my mother talked to me often about the dangers of you walking down the street by yourself. You could get kidnapped. I had a job at 15. Well, my first job was at 14. And it was actually like, you know how you open up a book and take notes? That's what we did on nights to talk about certain things, the danger of a world, what grooming looks like, what grooming looked like in children. I think the only thing I told my mom she hadn't covered is verbal abuse from family and watching it and hearing it. Because we think somebody said, get the F off the couch, just dumb yelling. But how many times that person is yelling and carrying on? That is abuse that makes a child feel. So that was one of the things I did talk to her about. But so in having openness with your children, for them to be comfortable and say, I don't think this right, or this was said to me, or this happened to me in school, you know, and this is when you put your cape on and you go and you say, listen, my child, just like when parents say, I don't make my children hug everybody. No, you shouldn't, because it's their space. If my child and kids pick up vibes. So I say this to say, like, we can protect them. But what about college? You know what I'm saying? We did all this protecting. They get off to college and get a dorm room and have their first lace drink because they left it there and went to the bathroom. So it's just... That's just a scenario, but I'm just saying.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
All right. It's fine. I mean, y'all are doing phenomenal. So now, you know, I want to take this, you know, just to close in and just wrap back around to the audio that we had listened earlier and then all the conversation that we had. And I just want to get y'all last opinion on, you know, how... From the various conversations and opinions that we heard from, you know, Anya, the Chocolate Queen, and Jeff, you know, in your opinion at this point, after hearing everything and having this discussion, how impactful for future generations do both parents, essentially, you know, black fathers, to be in a household or just to be active, period, whether on a weekend or whatever, just having that on contribution, support, structure, everything. We'll start with Jeff, because I know I ain't hungry. She hungry for the microphone tonight.
Okay.
She hungry for it.
You're not gonna like my answer.
well, go ahead.
For the future of families, black fathers being in the household, 9 times out of 10, it will not happen. Reason being, the way the world is set up now, I have to watch Basketball Wives to get a good look at how you supposed to run a household. Or I gotta go and watch
never be running a household
though. I mean this is what our kids are watching. This is what the grown women are doing now. Grown women, whether it be a side piece than to be the main woman. You want to know why? Because that guy ain't got to be around all the time. She's getting her bills paid, she's getting laid, and everything is good. So seeing a father in a household with a woman like that, I don't see nothing but toxic. So, as to keep the toxic out and let the kid grow up normally, it's going to be two households. It's going to be a father here and a mother here, because the way that this generation is coming up, they don't know how to communicate. Who communicates now? They text 2, 4, 5, 6 letter words that say a whole sentence. How the hell am I supposed to know what the hell that shit say? So I don't see it, man. None. So I can't see it, because the way that the reality TV, the books that's coming out, it's just not showing a family household. It's showing hot girl summer. It's showing look a little Red, I think that's her name, a new rapper. I mean, they're not
sexy red,
whatever her name is. It's they're not showing no, hey, I got a man, you know, he taking care of his kid. We live together. We're living great. There's no Queen Latifahs anymore. You see what I'm saying? Well, there's no MC Lights. Well, come on. I know. I'm just saying. She was positive. Damn. So I can't see a father in a household unless the woman has a mind for herself and not following after the internet or reality TV or the Kardashians. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
So that's my take on it.
Okay.
I guess it's a two-part answer. So if I had to say what it would impact, having two parents in the household, it would impact generational curses or stigma and wealth. It changes the dynamic, and you know, whatever you pour into your children now, you will hope that they pour into them children and they're on their own, right?
Right.
And then to piggyback off what Jeff said, yeah, I agree. Not 100%, because we only can control what we can control. And it's like we say, imagery, everything sells, right? So, but I will say, give yourselves a round of applause, this generation of men. Because I know a lot more good men, good fathers in my generation right now than I known in my uncles in them generation. Because my cousins and God brothers and siblings, we all are in the generation of, dang, the father wasn't in the household, wasn't there, you know, whatever, he said resources. But this generation of men, I have to say, I see more good fathers than I don't. So all I want to say is, like, if it's gonna be two parents in the household, the impact would be wealth, and breaking cycles.
Okay. All right. So I'm gonna give my perspective on this, and I'm gonna try to be calm when I do this. This is my take on it. As a single father that is raising a single black man, okay, mm-hmm. or raising him to be into a man, he's a teen now, mm-hmm. but to raise him into be into a man, do I believe that the future would continue the trend that it is now? Now, one thing I will definitely say is I will agree with Jeff. A lot of these heifers out here are definitely going along with the sexy red bullshit. And they're going to think that the bullshit that they're bringing to the table is their body.
Mm-hmm. But let me ask you a question, though, because you're right. You are absolutely right. I got people, I see that all the time. But this is go back to when there's a man in the household, right? The impact.
But what we're trying to say is what do the future look like? Mm-hmm. And if we're saying what the future looks, so, because we can say, yeah, we put more black men in the household, you know, black men in there, you know, it's gonna be less kids, less black men going to jail. It's gonna be less black men on the corner selling drugs. It's gonna be less black men.
But they'll out find there, other ways to oppress, right?
So, you know, they be out there doing whatever they want to do, right? Mm-hmm. But at this instance, we have black women that are giving up custody, not all, but some that are giving up custody to the black man or the man in general, because they no longer want to be the sole provider for that child. They want to go out, especially if they had kids young, and they want to still try to live their youth. They still want to try to recapture what they didn't have and try to do it right now. So if they had kids in their early 20s, by the time they get to their early 30s, what they try to recapture what they didn't have in their early 30s.
Hot girl
if
summer.
If they wanted to hold back then, they're going to be a whole 10 years later. So they could be out there spreading their legs and say, you know what? Go live with your father, because I don't want to deal with it anymore. And that's another thing, is that this generation that we're raising and the past generation and the generation that's coming after them are a little bit more sensitive. They don't understand the toughness. They not walking in 0 degree weather to go to school. They don't know what it feels like to go and have to be in a library doing a research paper. They don't understand when you had dial up and you had to wait 5 to 10 minutes, and if it dropped, you had to start all over again. They didn't have those accessibilities. So right now, when we talking about this generation in the past, those black men, I don't think that they're gonna have the patience, the endurance, the stamina to want to be in a kid's life and raise them. And because the other thing is, we have a lot of young grandmothers out here that is willing to take ownership of that child while those kids go out and still try to live their lives. And that child raised thinking that their mother is their sister, their daddy is their brother. So, because you have all those young grandparents that are out there that's willing to do that. You ain't got the at your mama no more. You ain't got the big grandma no more. You ain't got them anymore. They not out there.
But you know what? And you're absolutely right, 100% everything you said. But you realize that that took place back in the day too. It just looked different. Not the sexy red stuff, but not that part. But I'm saying that how many times we know, we are 80s, right? How many people you know that was raised by their grandparents?
I know a few people.
While their parents is out there being young parents.
But you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
But those grandparents was in their 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Not all of them. Not in the 80s.
They wasn't no 40s. They wasn't no 30s.
No, definitely not.
Grandparents now is early 40s.
You got a woman that's 32 and her daughter 15.
And they got two kids.
I will leave y'all with that. Okay. This is MNG. This is welcome. This is farewell, Mr. Nice Guy. So I would like to thank Anye, the chocolate queen over here, for showing up and spreading her knowledge. You know, royalty.
Thank you.
Jeff always got great insight. This is the Black Father Inclusivity Series that we are talking about, black fathers being in the household. Make sure you go ahead and send us a voice link. You can go ahead and do that on Spotify. If you wanted to send us an email, topic, or whatever, just shoot the breeze. You can always hit us up at farewellmrniceguy@gmail.com. Make sure you do follow us on Instagram at farewellmng, and we will see you on the next episode. Peace.
Thanks for joining us on this unfiltered journey with Farewell Mr. Nice Guy. We hope today's conversation brought you fresh insights and a renewed embrace of authenticity. To keep the canon vibes flowing, hit the subscribe button for more thought-provoking episodes and share the podcast with your friends. As we wrap up, keep embracing your true self, navigating life's twists, and making connections truly count. Until next time, remember that your journey to authenticity and growth is one to cherish.